Welcome to episode number 13. Great day, amazing humans. Yes, welcome to the Own Your Thrive podcast and Empowered in My Skin production. My name is Nkechi Wafa Robinson, and I am founder and CEO of Empowered in My Skin, an experienced technology executive at one of Canada's largest financial institutions, an author, an International Federation of Bodybuilding pro athlete, an inspirational speaker, and most recently, a viral sensation after my You Matter speech hit over 3 million views worldwide. This show is all about thriving, and I will be bringing on some amazing humans that own their thrive to help you figure out how you too can own yours. So please leave a review on whatever medium you are listening to this on, and make sure to join along on the web at empoweredinmyskin.com so you can be notified when new episodes are available. For now, I'm your girl. Let the show begin. Great day, amazing humans. I'm so excited here today in this interview on a very important topic. I'm here with a mental health advocate, stigma fighter, professional speaker, and founder of Stigma Zero. He is the instructor of Create Your Stigma Zero Workplace online training program. As someone who's experienced both a major physical illness and a major mental illness, he shares his personal experiences with impactful storytelling techniques. These moving stories can be found as part of his academy programs through his inspirational keynotes and his book, Stigma Zero, My Battle with Mental Illness at Home and in the Workplace. He aims to make this difficult topic accessible and consumable, so he blends his stories with rigorous research in order to mobilize knowledge and perspective. His goal is for everyone to understand this important topic so they are empowered to make a real change and ultimately join in the effort to realize his vision for a future without stigma. So I want you to put your ears together for the amazing Jason Finucane.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And so to the listeners, this is not my first time interviewing Jason, and I'm very excited for the first time ever on this podcast. And as you'll know, you'll see I'm growing as I go. I'm going to be posting back-to-back episodes. So tomorrow, the next episode is going to be the actual first interview that I had with Jason, where I learned so much about mental health. And so he is a rich resource. I completely encourage you, and we'll share all of his links where you can find him online and reach out to him and connect with him. I truly, if you need the support, he is the guy to go to. Okay. So Jason, thank you so much for willing to do interview number two.
Oh my goodness. It's my pleasure. I love what you're doing, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Thank you. I think it's important, right? It's a platform I have, and I might as well use it to talk about a very, very important topic. So before we get into the meats of that, just for the listeners, because this is the first time they're being introduced to you potentially, what can you tell me about the brand Jason Finucane, which I love your name, by the way, I love saying it. What can you tell me about the brand and what you stand for?
I must say first that I appreciate that you like my name, because you actually say it properly. So many people don't. It's an easy name to mispronounce, but, yes. Which I'm sure you're familiar with. I'm thinking that the two words that come to mind, if I was to describe me as a person and as a brand, as you say, it would be kindness and connection. Those are the two things that I value extremely highly in our world. And I frankly look for in other people. So if you're someone who is unable to connect, and if you're someone who is unkind, you're probably not going to get a lot of time from me. And when I am with someone, I mean, if I'm in this interview with you, if I'm sitting down and having, you know, dinner with someone, or it doesn't matter what it is, if I'm on the phone with someone, my goal is to fully connect with them in that moment. And I love it when people do that with me as well, because that's what this is about. And that's what that's a fuel that we all need. So one of the interesting side effects of what's going on right now with the COVID-19 pandemic and the quarantines is, at least in my neighborhood, I live outside of Montreal, Quebec. What I've found is that when I'm out walking, or my wife is out walking, she's noticed this as well, there's been an increase in kindness and connection. There's been more people, you know, we're social distancing, we're staying far away from each other, but as you walk past someone, it's invariable that they will make eye contact and say hello and hope you're doing well. And, you know, there's just an increase in this politeness and kindness and connection. And I think if we're lucky, that's one of the great responses we can have to this challenge, is we can increase those small but very important things.
Yes, I think that that's key. I think we've all learned a very valuable lesson that we're in this together. And doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is, your race, your religion, you know, your gender preference, we're all affected, right? Yeah, no one is exempt. So just for the listeners, based on the fact that so would you say you're the CEO of Kindness and Connection? Like, I own the CEO of like energy.
I'm willing to take that. I mean, I'm also the CEO of my company, Stigma Zero.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
So I absolutely identify with, and your listeners can't see right now, but I'm wearing a shirt that says Stigma Fighter on it. And, you know, I've dedicated my life now for many years, since 2006, I have been putting my energies into helping address what I see as a major problem in our society's view of mental illness and why there is a stigma still surrounding mental illness. And I realized years ago that we have the opportunity to end that stigma in a really meaningful way. And in doing so, we can radically accelerate how fast people will identify a mental illness if one begins to happen in their lives, mm-hmm. and get treatment if they need treatment, mm-hmm. And not be afraid of judgment and discrimination and any of mm-hmm. those things. Mm-hmm. And you know, all of this came out as a result of personal experience, which you mentioned in my bio, and for your listeners, you'll if you'd like to hear more, there's a lot more in the next podcast that'll come out.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. So we've never experienced the likes of this, and how's it affected you and your wife?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I live with bipolar disorder, and I was diagnosed in 2005, and many years ago became very, very skilled at managing my illness. Part of that skill involves an awareness. I have a heightened awareness of my own mental health. I have to, because if I sense any deviations from my baseline, I need to be very attentive to that, because I have an illness where things could go very badly if it goes all the way to serious depression or if it goes all the way up to mania. And so because I have a heightened sense of my mental health, this situation with COVID-19, with the quarantines and with everything, I suppose I'm slightly more prepared to deal with this, because I can tell the difference between the onset of a clinical depressive phase versus what might just be a frustration at all the restrictions that are being placed on us. You know, mm-hmm. even though we know we need them, we're all going to feel those frustrations. So mm-hmm. being able to tease out the source of the negativity that you feel inside, mm-hmm. whether that source is an emotional reaction to an extreme situation like we're all in, mm-hmm. or it is an illness manifesting, if you can tell the difference, that helps. That helps mm-hmm. a lot.
Yes.
I know for my wife, it's interesting. She actually works from home anyway. Mm-hmm. So her suddenly working from home is actually not that big of a change. Mm-hmm. Where it's hard for us is just the inability to be free. Like, we all don't have the freedom we normally would to go about and do the things we would normally do. Mm-hmm. That sense of restriction, I think, is the hardest. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of friends I can't see. Like, we all mm-hmm. can't see mm-hmm. our friends, you know. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things are definitely a challenge.
Mm-hmm. So what creative techniques have you implemented to be able to offset that and maybe cope with some of those changes?
Yeah, I think the best way to, I mean, there's two things that I want to say about this. First of all, you said it starting out that this truly is the greatest challenge to mental health that we in our lifetime have ever experienced. If we look back at some of the really big things that happened, like 9/11, for example, I mean, that was a very deep wound to all of our psyches. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The 2008 market crash, you know, mm-hmm. that was a frightening time. But the difference between those instances is that they didn't affect every facet of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't restrict our interactions with our friends, with our loved ones. They didn't restrict our movements. These are big differences. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, we all need to take this challenge seriously. Mm-hmm. This isn't just, you know, a Netflix and chill month. It's different because mm-hmm. we're not choosing mm-hmm. to do that. We are being asked to do that to protect, you know, society and hopefully save lives. So that's very important. But the other thing is that whenever there is a stress in our lives, and that stress could come from COVID-19 and the quarantine, it could come from a divorce, it could come from stress at work, all of these kinds of stresses, the best response, number one, is to take care of the absolute basics that you need as a human being every day.
Mm-hmm. And would that be like the analogy of put on your own oxygen mask first before you go and try to, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Because you may be the caregiver for someone who, you know, and you may know someone who has COVID-19 and you know, worst case scenario, they're in the hospital with it and you can't really even go visit them. I mean, that's a horrible situation to be in, mm-hmm. but you're only able to help that situation if you take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people, I think we take for granted on what does it mean to take care of ourselves, both physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. And I mean, firstly, there's obviously the basics of physical. Make sure you're eating as well as you possibly can. Make sure that you're exercising. If you're someone who already exercises, make sure you find a way to do that at home. If you used to go to a gym, if you used to have a routine that required other people, try to be creative and find ways to do it at home. But keep your body moving. Keep your endorphins up that comes from the exercise. So eating well, exercise, sleep. A lot of people are losing sleep over this, literally, not in the figurative sense, because there's anxiety and there's worry and there's fear, and that's all natural. But as best as you possibly can, find ways to sleep as well as you can, even if it's not as many hours, because you need that to recharge.
Yes.
And the last thing that is so important is that connection I talked about earlier, that, if you live alone, I have several friends who live alone and they're quarantining, they're working from home. They're not seeing anyone right now, other than when they go to the grocery store. And that's a bit of a strange experience right now. We're all wearing masks and staying away from each other. And there's a tension in the air. It is so vital to connect with other people that you feel close to, whether that's a family member or a friend or whomever. It doesn't even matter. It just matters that you have regular connections, and that can occur virtually the way that we're speaking right now. And so that's something that is very, very important is connecting with those that you can. And if you are living with someone, whether that's a roommate or a spouse, then make sure that the two of you are connecting with each other.
Yes. Yeah.
So vital. My wife and I, we're lucky in that we already really enjoy each other's company. So being around each other more is not posing a huge challenge to us, but it is easy to go through the entire day just worrying about the new stats and, you know, figuring out the Costco run and cooking and doing those things. And before you know it, the day's gone on and you haven't really connected.
Yes.
And in a normal day, in a normal society, in a normal situation, you can get away with that sometimes, but not now.
We are not in a normal situation at all. It's interesting because one of the things that I found very beneficial for me, and again, like you, I'm very great with my self-care.
Yeah.
And so right away, I knew I had to sort of list out all of the things that were my non-negotiables, like the things that are so important to keep me myself in the best wellness possible situation possible, and then figure out how do I now readjust my schedule, my routines to be able to do that. So that was number one. And that was extremely, extremely helpful and vital in making sure. And the other one that I loved about what you said is sleep versus rest. Initially I was staying up later. And I recognize my window of sleep was getting a lot shorter. Yeah. But I also do believe there's a difference between sleep and rest. So I've now introduced meditation. Like I'm doing more things that are helping me get better rest.
Good.
Yeah. So I think, so I like that. And then the connection, I actually think I'm the best daughter now because I check on my parents every single day.
Yeah. That is very important. And look, if depending on where you live, this could be more of a challenge, But if you can get outside and walk, like be outdoors.
In nature.
And be in nature and enjoy, like, especially now that spring is coming, it is unnatural for us to spend this much time cooped up. Mm-hmm. And that will only create more and more anxiety and more stress as time goes on. And so if you can get out, even if it's for 30 minutes a day, mm-hmm. just go for a walk. Mm-hmm. It will help your state of mind so, so much. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that my wife and I do really well is in the evening, there's a few hours every evening where we dedicate, where we do not look at our phones. We do not look at websites talking about coronavirus stats. We don't look at the news. We block that time off. And we either play a game, like, you know, we like this dominoes game that we often play together, or we'll watch, we'll actually Netflix and chill, but we'll choose to do that.
Yeah,
and we'll watch shows that completely immerse us in that world. The one we just finished was season 3 of Ozark, and it was fantastic. And so, you know, those kinds of things, it's the simple things sometimes that can actually have the most meaningful benefit if you do them intentionally.
Yeah,
if you don't just kind of, you know, blindly walk through your day. I think if you do that, then after several weeks of this, we're already several weeks in, and it could be many, many more. Mm-hmm. It's important to make sure that you have that regimented mm-hmm. self-care. Mm-hmm. It has to be daily.
Thank you. Thank you for those suggestions. So we're fighting more than a virus, right? We're fighting stigma, discrimination, and fear. And all of those, you know, don't necessarily lend to making this much easier to deal with. And so, you know, what can you say around the stigma that this has, you know, sort of brought to the forefront?
Yeah, look, the reason I define myself as a stigma fighter, and I've dedicated my time to this, is that when you really break it down, any stigma, whether the stigma is towards mental illness or towards race or towards anything else, anytime there is a stigma towards something, mm-hmm. it is born out of ignorance, it is born out of fear, and it is born out of a lack of understanding of that thing. So if you are a Caucasian and you are racist towards African Americans, the chances are you probably don't understand or know in any meaningful way any African Americans, or else you couldn't have that.
Hey,
it's to me, it's so simple. The idea of having these negative thoughts, these negative fears, they are our own worst enemy. It's our mind and the anxiety that we naturally can have, mm-hmm. and the fears that we naturally can have, they can spin out of control very quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's why if you scroll the internet, there is so much out there, like about the coronavirus, for example, that is so negative, so mm-hmm. incorrect, mm-hmm. so based on opinion and not science. Mm-hmm. And the reason those things happen is all the same reasons I just said.
Yeah.
It's the fear and it's the ignorance. So why it's so important is because if you remove stigma from any situation, you remove basically layers of sewage that are just on top.
I like that. Layers of sewage
that are just getting in the way mm-hmm. of you accessing the truth and the core of anything. And so mm-hmm. if we talk about, I want to use anxiety as an example, because that is almost certainly the most common mental illness that is going to show up in people in this time, because this is a time where worry and anxiety is naturally going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it is so important for people to understand the difference of an anxious emotional state, which is very natural for us to have when we are stressed in this way, versus the onset of an actual clinical diagnosis of anxiety disorder, for example. And the basic difference is that the clinical version of the illness can appear without a trigger or a stimulus. So somebody last year could have suddenly started experiencing anxiety with no real topical reason, mm-hmm. no sense of, hey, why is this happening to me right now? My life's good. I'm not stressed. Everything's fine. Yet I'm having panic attacks. What's going on? Well, that's just unfortunately the way that some mental illnesses can appear. It's the way mine appeared. Mm-hmm. Appeared out of the blue, out of nowhere, and it was related to the way my brain was functioning. Mm-hmm. It's the brain chemistry that is causing it. But when you have a massive trigger, which is what we're going through right now, it can create the onset of the symptoms of anxiety, which mm-hmm. may or may not need treatment, mm-hmm. and may or may not need treatment in the long run. So for example, anxiety could start now and mm-hmm. could continue, but mm-hmm. it could also start now, and then when the situation improves, it could go away, mm-hmm. and it may not need treatment. What is important, though, is here's where stigma gets into the mix and ruins things, is that if you have a person right now who's feeling anxiety for the first time in their life, they've never felt it before, and it's frightening to them. If they're worried about what other people will think of them as a result of the stigma attached to mental illness, they are much more likely to hide it and to try to just deal with it on their own. But if you remove the stigma completely, you view it as, this is a medical condition. I may or may not need treatment, but what I almost certainly need is to do something about it. And one of those things, I mean, all the basics, they all start with the self-care, the good eating, the good sleeping, adding meditation, adding yoga, adding exercise. These are ways that you can calm your mind. And I would say I actually have family members and friends who are struggling with anxiety right now. Mm-hmm. Some of them had it before, and then it went away, and now it's flared up again. And they've required treatment to calm it down for now. Mm-hmm. Others never had it before, and they're having it now. And what they're doing is they're using, you know, 2 week period or so to figure out, okay, is this chronic? Is this happening all the time, mm-hmm. or is it just a bad day or a bad couple of days? We all are going to have bad days. We're all going to have bad weeks. Mm-hmm. None of us ever should feel significantly anxious or significantly depressed, mm-hmm. or significantly manic or hypomanic. Mm-hmm. We should never feel that way for multiple weeks in a row without any stoppage.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I was mentioning to you just prior to this, and it might shock a lot of people, that I didn't realize that I had an anxiety episode. I don't know if that's the right way to term it, but I felt anxiety when I went to Costco one day and I had my gloves and I had my mask on, and I just felt so uncomfortable. There was a feeling of gloom. I didn't feel good in the space. And I remember when I came out, I felt just that little release, like kind of just how I just expressed that. And it wasn't until somebody was sharing, because I think in sharing storytelling, that's where we connect, right? And I was like, I felt that. And I realized, wow, I named it. I was like, okay to name it. I was that was anxiety, like me and KC, right? I felt it. And for me, to your point, I just didn't tolerate it. I'm like, okay, what can I do? Because I will have to go back to Costco. I will have to go back to the groceries because I tend to be the one to do it for the household. What am I going to do next time to either observe my... So I became the observer of myself.
So important. And and for anyone out there who is... I believe I mentioned this in the other podcast as well, so there'll be a bit of duplication, but it's worth repeating.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For anyone out there who is concerned about their mental state, meaning... they're feeling anxious or anxiety, they're feeling depression, and these are feelings they've never had before. Mm-hmm. And they want to know, you know, is this something I need to not worry about, but is this something I really need to do something about or perhaps mm-hmm. see a doctor for? And one of the ways you can do that is exactly what you just said. Learn to observe yourself, but also learn to track yourself. And so I, as someone who manages bipolar disorder and have for many years, one of the tools I use that I recommend, and I'm not compensated at all for this endorsement. I just really like this app. It's called eMoods. And I got it on the App Store. I believe it's available for Android as well. It's a very simple app that on a daily basis, you can track multiple points, including how much did you sleep? How many hours did you sleep? What is your energy like? What's your anxiety like? In a simple just, I have none, I have low, I have medium, and I have high. Mm-hmm. Energy, anxiety, irritability, these kinds of things.
And does it give you an analytics? Does it show you a trend or?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. You can see graphs and follow it. And it is so, so useful. I track, one of the things I have to monitor is my blood pressure, because it's a bit of a side effect from some of the medications I mm-hmm. have to take for bipolar. And so I track my blood pressure and I input the numbers in there. I track whether or not I got exercise, whether or not I stretched, you know.
Okay. It's called eMoods?
eMoods, yes.
No hyphen.
Nope.
So electronic. Okay. electronic moods. Okay, awesome. Exactly.
Yeah, and so that is a great way to essentially establish where you are right now and then compare that data with your baseline. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you are not an anxious person, and let's say, you know, if I've known you for 10 years and we're dear friends and you tell me about that Costco trip, my first instinct is going to be, okay, that's a natural reaction to a very bizarre set of circumstances mm-hmm. that you found yourself in. Because when do we go to Costco and stand in a line 2 minutes apart with masks on our face and not talking? And it's all weird, right? Yeah. It's very normal for you to feel that anxiety. But let's say the next day you're doing this interview and you have a panic attack during this interview.
Okay.
Now that's where you can say, okay, wait a second. I'm not anxious about podcasts. I do them. I love them. Mm-hmm. I enjoy meeting people and interviewing them and connecting with them. So why on earth am I experiencing an anxiety attack now? Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by, if it starts to invade your regular state of mind mm-hmm. and your regular activity mm-hmm. and your regular life, mm-hmm. now it's becoming obtrusive and you need to watch out how often that's happening.
Okay.
Right. So if that were to happen tonight, well, that's your first red flag. Something mm-hmm. happened that, you know, is a concern. Your first one was Costco, yep. but it's a lot more explainable. Mm-hmm. This one is a bit of a concern, but that doesn't mean you run away to the doctor tomorrow.
Yes.
This means that you watch it for a little while.
Yeah.
And if it repeats and starts to, and then invade your time with your husband or, mm-hmm. you know, your time at work, mm-hmm. all of it, then you start to realize, okay, now I actually have something that is impacting my everyday life.
And I'm assuming you should be also looking at what might have transpired just before, what was said, you know, what's in the environment, because that could be the triggers.
Yes.
You want to be that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's what I mean by just knowledge with mental illness, very unbiased clinical knowledge is power. The more you know about what's happening to you, or if it's a loved one you're concerned about, mm-hmm. perhaps that loved one is in a serious depression right now mm-hmm. and you're trying to help them. Mm-hmm. If one of your listeners is in that place, you go get the eMoods, put it on your phone and do it for them.
Do it for them.
Right? Yeah. Until they can help, mm-hmm. until they feel better. So that can be huge.
And so I'm just going to actually, because one of the questions I want to ask you, this is a perfect segue. So let's just talk about loved ones. And so assuming that we taking care of the loved ones are okay, like we are mental, like we feel well, right? But we are dealing with someone who isn't and not doing too well. So just two questions. One, you know, how can we help loved ones? You just gave a great example of that, who are either discovering anxiety, like for the first time, yep. or maybe already clinically diagnosed and this is just really elevating their experience. That's one. And two, and then how much help do we actually give of ourselves? Because I think after a while that can also weigh on us as well. And yeah. and how do we sort of not distance ourselves, but what might be some techniques that it'd be okay to say, hey, I need a little bit of a break.
Yeah, absolutely. It's never okay to help someone to the point where you're damaging yourself and you're damaging your own mental health. That is very, very important. And the other thing is, I've always been a believer of the person who has the condition, whether that, like you say, is anxiety or depression, or in my case, bipolar. The person who has it must come to terms with the reality of it, mm-hmm. whether that's a formal diagnosis or a suspected diagnosis. They must face, to me, it's a little bit like if a person has regular fitness, they're you know, they're in good shape, everything's fine, and they put on 50 pounds over the course of 2 years, mm-hmm. but they don't admit it. Right? That wouldn't happen because you can't deny.
Yeah. Right there. It's like you don't see it.
Yeah, exactly. And so a person may be defensive about the fact that they put on weight, but they're not going to deny that it exists. Mm-hmm. But people with mental illnesses will do that. Mm-hmm. So somebody who's experiencing anxiety, if they're concerned about stigma, or they're concerned, or if they have self-stigma, or they just don't want to accept it, they might say, no, it's not anxiety. I'm fine. I'm just stressed. It's just COVID-19. It's just. And I'm not being critical to people who do that. I did that. I did that for almost 2 years. Back in 2002 to 2005, I resisted heavily the idea that I might need medical treatment for a mental illness. I just had a hard time identifying with that potential reality. I had an enormous amount of stigma towards mental illness. And frankly, I didn't believe I had one. I just flat out didn't want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I accepted it, and when I started to own the reality that I had this illness, from that moment forward, I became the strongest advocate for my own well-being. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it was a lot easier for those around me to mm-hmm. support me.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
That's a good, I wasn't there. I wasn't one of those around you, but that's good. Like, that's a good situation. How about a reverse where the person's just not. Yeah.
This is what I was going to say is that I don't want to brush over. I mean, yes, I got there eventually, but when I said 2.5 years, I was engaged and living with my mm-hmm. fiance, and she was the one trying to get me to see that what I was experiencing was clinical depression and that I might have bipolar disorder because I kept bouncing out of the depression and ending up in this sort of hypomanic state where I was super energized. And I was arguing that, no, when I'm depressed, I don't know what that is, but when I'm not depressed, I feel good. And, you know, I kept denying it. And the way that she got through to me over time was consistent and persistent, reminding me of the facts. So she simply helped me to understand what my baseline was, which is what my normal state from an energy point of view, mentally, otherwise. She helped me understand what the basics were so that I could start to see how far I had deviated from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that data was useful. She also encouraged me to not feel stigma towards mental illness, to mm-hmm. recognize that it was a brain disease, that mm-hmm. I really shouldn't feel this way. Mm-hmm. And again, I didn't accept it right away, mm-hmm. but it was information I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And she helped me immensely with that. The reality is that everyone will have a different trajectory towards accepting the reality mm-hmm. of something like this. The first step is to be consistent and to remind that individual that it's not their fault
mm-hmm.
and I believe and it worked for me in many ways, and I've used this these analogies in all of my keynotes. If you use analogies towards illnesses that we all fully understand, we have no difficulty imagining.
Yeah.
So you know, as an example, if this person that is suffering is a woman and they're struggling with anxiety and they're in denial about it, if you were to say to them, listen, if you found a lump on your breast tomorrow, would you just pretend it wasn't there, or would you want to make sure that that lump wasn't breast cancer?
Mm-hmm.
And would you feel guilty that you had a lump on your breast? Would you feel ashamed?
Mm-hmm.
No, because there's no stigma towards breast cancer anymore. Mm-hmm. There used to be decades mm-hmm. ago, but it's mm-hmm. long gone.
Mm-hmm.
You would seek medical attention to correct a problem with your body.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference with a mental illness. It is nothing more, if it is clinical and chronic, it is nothing more than a failure in your biochemistry of your brain.
Yeah.
And if you can address it, then you might be able to find a treatment that corrects it.
Yeah.
And in some cases, many people don't even need medical treatments. They just need cognitive behavioral therapy, or they need to add, you know, a variety of lifestyle changes. I tried all of those things and none of them worked. I ended up needing medical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I'm incredibly grateful. Mm-hmm. I take medication every day and it keeps my illness completely at bay. It's mm-hmm. it's like I have type 1 diabetes and I take insulin every day to correct mm-hmm. it. It's really that clinical and linear a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And for many people, that can be the case. And so getting them to see that and remove the emotion, remove the shame, remove the stigma from the situation,
mm-hmm.
it becomes a lot clearer.
Yes.
And then the last thing I would say is to remind people, no one deserves to suffer chronically.
Mm-hmm.
Now that suffrage can come from, you could be in a bad marriage. You could be in an abusive marriage, emotionally or physically. And you know what?
Yeah.
No one deserves that. We all know that.
Yeah.
And we would all say that to the person. Who
yeah.
But we don't say that about the way, essentially, a person who denies a mental illness and just mm-hmm. tries to grind it out, like, mm-hmm. like I did for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
they're essentially willfully choosing to stay in a bad situation that mm-hmm. they alone have the ability to make better.
Right. And it's funny because that's one of the premise for me even starting this podcast, because everyone is worthy of feeling good. Everyone. As babies, we're born to feel good. And so it is, I want as many people to return back to that good, you know, return to, or start to step forward into their good. You know, yes. Feeling good is what you should feel, you know, right. And you're deserving of it. So, yes. So I just have, I want another, one more question before we wind down. So as a leader, you know, I have wellness check-ins with my team, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot of leaders out there, or, you know, people managers and doing exactly the same, and entrepreneurs maybe with their teams and stuff like that. But not everyone's talking on the phone. And so it's always hard to get a sense, especially now that there is really no physical, like if you're not on video, it's really hard to see people.
Yes.
Not everyone's talking. And so I believe it's important for people to talk in this time more than ever. Right. And so
I could not agree more.
Yeah. And I think silence, we shouldn't just tolerate the silence for people being okay, because they're internalizing a lot and they're living in isolation. And some of these people not talking are also living alone. And yeah. So what would be something, even just for loved ones, what would be any suggestions you might have, or tips or tricks to get people maybe talking and opening up about how they might be feeling or what they might be experiencing through this?
Yeah, I think, thinking of you as an example of any people leader in any company, we all know that it's important to have regular contact, regular, basically checkups, not just on the productivity, but on the person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, moments where you can connect and ask them, how are you? And how are you doing? And, you know, how are things with not only your work here, but your personal life, and without being invasive, but you can get the person to open up a little bit. And the way to do that is to show genuine interest, mm-hmm. and frankly, to make time on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. And so I agree with you. Let's say you have a team of 20 people that you normally would touch base with once mm-hmm. a month. Mm-hmm. I would say that right now, if you can, you schedule 10 or 15 minute chats with those people once a week. Mm-hmm. And you know, just they don't need to be overly formal. They don't need to be long, but they need to be something that the person can count on, mm-hmm. but not just count on, feel a sense of like, oh yeah, I gotta get my stuff together because I'm meeting with my boss, you know. and not from an obligation point of view, but mm-hmm. from a healthy point of view. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is really, really important. And the other thing, just in general, you know, the work we do with Stigma Zero to try to help companies to end the stigma around mental illness is to create a work environment that will allow what you're describing. Mm-hmm. That will make more and more managers and employees comfortable with having honest discussions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not difficult to have a conversation with a person who's doing great. Mm-hmm. You ask them how they're doing and they tell you, honestly, they're doing great. And you chat about that for a while and mm-hmm. you move on. It's fine. The hard conversations are the one where the person's actually struggling.
Yeah.
And when you ask them the question, how are you doing? Do you have a relationship with them and a trust level with them? And do they trust that if they are honest with you, you won't judge them, you yeah. won't stigmatize them, you won't yeah. discriminate against them, mm-hmm. To be able to honestly say, you know what, I'm actually really struggling with this.
Right, right.
And I don't know how to improve it.
Yeah.
And that's where, especially in companies, you know, companies have EAPs and have access to therapy and have access to all sorts of resources that can help a person's mental health. Mm-hmm. But those are useless if the person doesn't ask.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think a manager's job in many cases is to begin that conversation, mm-hmm. try to uncover if there is any problem under the surface, mm-hmm. not in a prying, digging way, but just in a, you know, look, we're in this together. And if yeah. you need help in any way,
I'm here for you.
I'm here for you. Yeah. And so's the company through yeah. these programs.
I also share how I'm feeling so that people who pretty much think I'm invisible recognize that, no, I have my moments as well. But, and here are some of the techniques I use to get through them. One of the valuable things I've been doing for a really long time, ever since a very close friend of mine lost her mom and I was reading about grief and how to help people cope through it, I always ask people, how are you doing today? Mm-hmm. Or how are you doing in this moment?
Yeah.
Because sometimes we're so general about how you doing. I'm okay.
Yep.
No, how are you doing today? How are you doing in this moment? You know? So we've talked. So thank you so much for everything you shared. I'm trying to keep this to a consumable time. So we've talked about the importance of self-awareness and self-care, You shared a tool that eMoods, which I'm also going to check out myself, and understanding your baseline and then comparing, you know, other things that are happening within you to that baseline and the importance about that. Being informed, I get it. Like, it's so critical. There's a quote that I use often, which is understanding. I seek to understand and seek to be understood. So important. But the understanding is the truth we stand under. More important than ever now. And then in terms of, you know, how to really help others, you talked about being consistent and persistent and, you know, reminding people of the facts. I love that. I love that. And it's the facts of your observation from a very loving, empathetic space, and not to make them feel like it's their fault. And no one deserves to suffer chronically. So it's making sure that people realize that your default should be feeling good and suffering should be temporary and pass, you know?
Yeah.
And then I definitely love the tip. So that you gave in terms of how we can potentially help others open up. So after all of that,
good summary.
I love more. I love you too. You know, what would you love to leave the listeners with? What tools can you share, or, you know, what parting words do you want to say that, you know?
Yes, please. So just for some context, again, any listeners who listen to the next podcast will get more detail, but in short, the company I founded in 2014 called Stigma Zero, we exist to help employers to end the stigma of mental illness, to address, to improve mental health in the workplace. And we do this through an online training program. Now, although we sell that to companies, we really wanted to help during COVID-19. This crisis is affecting everyone. We wanted to offer something that could help individuals. And, that's not our target market. We don't actually sell to, you know, one by one. We generally work with companies. So we created a version of our program. It's approximately 20% of the content of our full program that we sell. And we called it Mental Health 101 at Home and in the Workplace. And it is all the basic but vital information that exists in understanding mental health, understanding mental illness, understanding stigma and how to overcome it, and a few other really important lessons. This online program can be completed in 40 to 45 minutes. It's not long. And the thing is that we are very proud to offer it for free to any individual. So at the as you look at this podcast, I'm going to be sending the link to you. You can share that. And the way this link works is you'll click on it. You'll be brought to a sign-in window. You put in your email and your username and password, and you'll be in. There's no charge whatsoever for individuals. And if any company out there wishes to consider our training, I just ask that they give us a call. We are pleased to work with anyone. We know in a lot of cases, for a lot of medium to small size companies, the COVID crisis is radically impacting their finances, their cash flow. We are happy to work with any company who has interest in rolling out our training, even if it means that you sign up next week and you pay in 3 months. You know, we're very flexible. We want to make this work, because this training now more than ever is so important to get people to become empowered in their own lives, and also the ability to help others.
I love that. Empowerment, self-empowerment, or empowering others is a lead domino that has the ability to change the world. So I thank you for your generosity. I shared that on LinkedIn as well. And so I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And I look forward to, you know, sharing that material. I look forward to this podcast actually going live. So I'm very excited about this. And thank you again, Jason, for the way you just show up. I love the way you broke it down. The analogy is golden. Just that thought is, how do you find the analogy? Because people understand analogies. It's the easiest thing. Sometimes you hit your head. It's like that emoji where you have your head in your face. It's like, oh, why didn't I get it like that? And so thank you for all the work that you're doing to just eliminate this and just rid the world of this stigma. It's very important work. I stand behind you. I stand for you. I praise and celebrate you.
Thank you so much. And the feeling is mutual. I love the work you're doing. And I mean, this is not your full-time job. You have a massive full-time job and you're finding time to do this. So that's amazing.
I love it. It's great. And if there's anything I could tell anybody, just as a parting, just because you said that, I think this is a time where I say, this is not vacation, this is preparation. And, you know, for many of us that are not working, what are your gifts and your talents? You can monetize that. You can figure out how you can give to the rest of the world, and you don't need millions of followers. You just need to reach out and connect to somebody who can really benefit from your life experience and skills mm-hmm. and talents, right? So yeah, it's a great way to think about what you can do to help others at this
well
time.
Said. Well
yeah.
said.
So Jason, thank you so much. And to everyone that's listening, thank you for putting your ears together for this amazing human. And this is where I say, we're out. So there you have it. I hope you're thriving and thoroughly enjoyed this episode. And remember, whatever medium you are listening to this on, please subscribe, like, review, and share this podcast with somebody else that you think could benefit from the tips that were delivered. Because when we share, that is truly when we have the capacity and the power to change the world. It's been awesome hanging with you. It's your girl, and I'm out.